It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Lori Gills here, Renee Ritchie, and Alex Lindsay. There's lots to talk about, including the gradual reopening of Apple stores. We're very excited. Also, Apple making moves to get out of China for some of its production. How you can have Tim Cook as your graduation commencement speaker. And the Thunderbolt flaw and why Apple users probably don't have to worry. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless. Whether they're working in the office or remotely, visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 713. Recorded May 12th, 2020. Quacks McThrashalot. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. LastPass manages every entry point to your business so you can mitigate risk whether you're working in the office or remotely. No matter where your employees are, LastPass helps you keep peace of mind. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. I know. You're a real singer, Lori Gill. I should do it in a punk style. Apple news! Lori Gill from iMore.com, where she is a senior editor. Hello, Lori.
I'm just having too much fun listening to you today.
You are silly. We're all silly. We're punchy, right? Also with us, Alex Lindsay's back. He's sitting in Andy and Akko's seat. We're going to start rotating through people because I don't want to have too many people on at once. Hi, Alex. Good to see you.
Hey, how's it going?
Looking good to be here. Stellar in his 090 media suite. And also with us, Renee Ritchie, who says he wants to be Alex Lindsay when he grows up. Renee, is that
I do, YouTube? And I want to be Lori Gill, too, because I can do the
Your hair's getting almost long enough to headbang.
Wow.
I didn't wear a hat today. I dared to actually have hair seen in public. We'll see how this goes.
But I don't understand, because I haven't had a haircut in more than 2 months.
Me either.
And my hair looks like this. What did you start at zero?
No, my hair is growing sideways like Mr. Mime. You have no idea how much I had to compact it before I could come on.
I get it. It's going out. Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Mime is a Pokemon character for
I said, I look like the illegitimate love child of Bill Clinton and Don King right now, Leo. It's just not pretty.
Oh, horrible thought. I think we should all celebrate our COVID cuts with their badge of honor.
Yeah.
I did order. Oh, man. I should never have
gone. A Flobee.
Almost. I went back on Instagram. I almost did, but I did get a clipper, but it had a 22 millimeter comb. So what is that? I think I'm just going to
see. I'm scared. I have a number two. I'm scared.
Yeah, I'm scared too.
I was fortunate that I'm always busy, so I tend to go to Candace and have her cut it really short.
Yeah, you always get it short.
And then I just let it go for a long time, you know, 3 or 4 months at a time. So I happened to be just, it was getting really long. It would have been a disaster because like a week after I got my haircut with Candace, everything got shut down.
Yep.
And it would have been, I would have been literally in a ponytail by now.
Don't you look animatronic if it gets too long? Like, that's what I feel like. I feel like I'll start to look like an animatronic.
Yeah.
That's my nightmare.
I just keep on adding more. The key is just more and more hair product.
I went to Candace on March 12th. Candace, and as one might have gathered now, Alex and I share a hairdresser. I went to Candace on March 12th and told her at the time, I said, cut it so it'll last because I'm not going to see you for a while. And she didn't believe me. She said, no, we're going to stay open. And she said, I always cut it so it'll look good as it grows out. But I don't think she anticipated quite this.
We're like Elon Musk. We're opening regardless. We're just opening.
We're just going to stay open. How about that? Elon Musk today has opened the Tesla plant in Fremont against the rules of the Alameda County Health Office in the state of California, and we'll see what happens. I don't know if they're...
I think he's a genius. I just think he needs a wellness check at this point. I think he's given ample evidence for a wellness check.
Stormtroopers going to rush the place and send everybody home, or... I don't know what's going to happen.
It's just drama. Well, it feels like drama for drama's sake.
Yeah.
Like they'll come up with a negotiated solution like they always do, and they would have done that behind closed doors anyway. It's just
Alameda County saying, I want to open. He wants to open. See, this is the thing. I don't think it's a good look for brands because he's saying effectively, I don't care if my workers get sick. I need to make Teslas, and I think that's not a good look.
Yeah.
Well, and it's hard. I mean, I think we're going to see in my hometown or where I grew up in Pennsylvania, there's a huge fight where basically the governor said everyone has to stay home and the sheriff's or the prosecutors basically said, yeah, we're not going to enforce that.
Right.
Like, and
I'm very sympathetic. I mean, I want to get a haircut.
Right. Me too.
But I don't want to get a haircut and get sick, and I don't want to make somebody sick because I need a haircut.
Right. 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 I'm just saying it's going to be, I think that the next couple weeks, the next couple months is probably going to, we're going to see a lot more tension between folks that want to get back to it and folks that want to stay safe.
It's hard when you have, like, I don't want to pick on Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos because they're getting a lot of heat coming their way anyway, but it's hard when you have billionaires who, regardless of how they actually feel, come off as incredibly callous towards the employees under them who can at least afford. And you just feel like, just take 1% and give them all the protection, all the everything that they need, and then have them come back. Just, you know, you can make it an oasis if you want to.
Well, I think that the hard part is that and this is probably not really Mac related, but the hard part is that you have people who are making decisions about whether people can stay in or not that are not really affected financially by it. And then you have people who are wanting them to go back to work that are not really financially. Yeah. You know, so you have a bunch of people who aren't
who
being
benefit
affected
by
trying
not
to make
working.
Decisions.
Yeah.
Who are in the mix as well, like the Facebooks.
Yeah.
So
go
ahead.
We can move on.
No, I was just going to tie it into the Apple story because Apple is going to start opening its retail stores next week.
I'm worried about that too, because they have like a couple cases in Korea and in California where one person coughed in the wrong place and you see instant butterfly effect. It's like suddenly 19 people have it, then 37 people have it.
I'm not sure why they're choosing the stores they're choosing. It's Idaho, South Carolina, Alabama, and Alaska. I guess those are states that don't have a shelter in place ordinance in effect right now.
Yeah.
I think it's also,
and there are states opening up.
Go ahead, Lori. Yeah.
There are states opening up right now, like just starting to. I think Wednesday is the reopening date for quite a few states where they're going to start allowing retail stores to open or restaurants to open, but with limited capacity. So they're following all the rules. And this speaks a little bit to what I was going to say, which is we're, you know, almost 3 months into shelter in place across the country right now. And we are now in a position of, the economy does have to get back on track in some capacity. What does that look like? Because the fact is, we can't just shut down the entire country. Something has to keep going. And so right now, there's the balance, Leo, that you were talking about, of getting back to work, reopening the economy, but also protecting people that are most vulnerable to getting sick and causing more of a spread.
Don't know if we know how to do this safely.
Mm-hmm. Other countries seem to have done it much better than us, at least. Like, they protected the economy and lowered the curve, flattened the curve. I forget the jargon, but they managed to do both while we were sort of caught flat-footed, back on our heels. And I include Quebec. We have the worst situation in Canada, and it doesn't seem to be getting better, and they still want to open anyway. So a lot of other countries did it way smarter than we did and protected the economy. So
I think not having tests really makes it hard. If you had tests, had widespread testing, you could perhaps, I guess,
isolate. That's what other countries did, right?
Yeah, you could. Wuhan just found, 9 cases, and now as a result, they're testing everybody in Wuhan, China, 11 million people. Immediately.
And people won't wear masks. It's like an 80% reduction in transmission if everybody's wearing a mask. I'm like, no masks for me, suckers.
Yeah. So here's what Apple is going to do. They say we'll open initially with additional safety procedures, including temperature checks. That's what they did in China. That's what they did for SARS and MERS. The problem with the current problem, COVID-19, is that there are asymptomatic carriers. So that's not perfect. Social distancing, that helps no matter what. And face coverings to ensure customers and employees continue to stay healthy. They say face coverings. I'm not clear if that means just the employees or if, as some places have done, they'll require that you wear a mask going into the store as well. A lot of places in this area are doing that. They're saying you can
Costco,
come in.
Famously.
Yeah. You have to wear a mask if you're coming in, which annoyed some people who said, I'll never shop at Costco again.
Did you see their tweet, Leo? There was a woman who put up this big thing saying, like, something like, live free and don't wear masks. and boycott Costco. And Costco's social reply was, we look forward to watching your documentary one day.
Apple also says our new social distance protocol allows for a limited number of visitors in the store at one time. That's so you can distance. And I don't know if you've seen this where you are, but here in Petaluma, the Starbucks, which never closed because I guess coffee is essential, has
it is for me.
On the sidewalk out front, they have boxes where people are to stand so that they are standing in line 6 feet
Our
apart.
Supermarkets have that.
Yeah, supermarkets are doing that. They're putting up plastic plexiglass barriers between the checkers with maybe little holes for the stuff.
This COVID has destroyed our, like Apple stores were just redesigned in a way that made them so susceptible to COVID. Like, they took apart everything that was a normal distancing part of a retail experience and jammed everyone together around, like, groves and promenades and forums and got us all as close together. And then COVID came around and goes, I shouldn't have done that.
Well, and even if you look at the office design, open offices have turned out to be a disaster because you can't reopen because they're all open offices. So we're going to see most of these companies not really bringing anyone back until 2021. So it's going to be a really interesting, process. All of the things that and the question is, no one knows. We don't know if the tests will mean that you're immune. Whether the tracing will really work or whether it's really effective. And so that we're kind of in probably the most unknown of unknowns we've had in our lifetime.
It's all a big experiment. Apple says we recommend, where possible, customers buy online for contactless delivery or in-store pickup. I guess it's not an economic, in this case for Apple, there's no economic incentive to open up. I mean, I'm sure they're losing revenue, but they have a little extra, stored away for
the servicing has been hard. People are getting really angry about lack of servicing. Like,
I think that must be
they can't just get
right?
their computer fixed and picked up. And
with many working and learning from home, our primary focus will be providing service and support at the Genius Bar. So it's for people. Yeah. I mean, imagine you're trying to work from home, or your kids are trying to learn online, and your laptop dies, and Apple's not there to fix it. People could call support and send it in, though, right?
Yes. But that's not as quick typically as a Genius Bar.
Yeah, that could take, a trip that could take 2 hours could take a week because you have to send it in and wait for it to get sent back.
Go ahead.
In some retail situations, I've taken my Mac in and literally an hour later I walked out with it fixed. So having to send something in really does make, put it at a disadvantage for people who can't be without their. I know a couple of people who have something wrong with their computer or their AirPods or something like that, and they're just waiting because they can't afford to be without that device without going to the store and having it just taken care of right away.
Here's a picture from Australia where Apple stores opened last week of people. You could see they're in line. They've got barriers set up in the mall, and then they're slowly one by one going into the store.
Every day is an iPhone launch day now.
Yeah. I'll tell you, as somebody who's in a higher risk population, I'm not anxious to go to a restaurant, to go to a store, to do any of this stuff. And I wonder how much people are going to.
Ben Thompson was tweeting about going out for Mother's Day because Taiwan has been reopening, and they did that. They did the isolation, the masks, the contact tracing, all of that stuff, and they're returning to functionality without the anxiety.
Zero cases in Taiwan, so that's maybe
going on for like 2 weeks, and I think Hong Kong is going on for 2 weeks. Vietnam is going on for 10 days, 2 weeks.
Here's some video.
Like, we know what works, we just lack the will to do
it. Here's some video from the Australian Apple stores. Everybody in masks. It doesn't feel super safe to me, but maybe I'm just I'm a germaphobe like everybody is.
The guy taking photographs.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a celebrity just for taking your life in your hands and going to
I don't
an
mean
Apple
to
store.
Be bitter. I apologize. I've just been sheltered in place for so long like the rest of us.
Apple stores in Germany reopening May 11th. The Idaho store opened yesterday. Yeah. So Apple's slowly reopening. It's been how long? Not quite 2 months that they've been closed all over the world.
It closed in April, right? Beginning early April.
Yeah. And remember that the stores in China reopened months ago. South Korea is opening now. Australia, as I mentioned, Austria opening. And a few states in the U.S. and more stores will be reopening soon. Apple COO Jeff Williams says he's optimistic about Apple. You know, it's funny. 6 months ago, that would have been like, what? Yeah, yeah, sure, Jeff, I am too. But it's a little different now, isn't it, right? Post-pandemic, he says, I'm optimistic. Knows. He's speaking to Fox Business. I'm optimistic as you look around. You see the resilience of the people working through this challenging time. And when I take a look inside of Apple, I couldn't be more encouraged. During the last quarter, even though these are challenging times, we launched three new products. I feel great about the economy in the long haul, and it's just a matter of getting from here to there. He was asked about this year's iPhone releases, but Apple's never going to say anything under the best of circumstances. Our supply chains are running largely at capacity, and people are continuing to work. I couldn't be prouder of the team finding new ways to get the job done. People have been really resourceful, and we're moving the ball forward. Now, one thing they're doing is they are looking at places other than China to manufacture. According to the Nikkei Times, Apple will produce millions of AirPods in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Made in Vietnam.
I think there's a lot of reasons for Apple to diversify its product line. You know, like, so, you know, having all the manufacturing in China from both a health perspective, political perspective, tariff perspective, all these things, it's probably better for them to get a little bit more spread out than they have been.
AirPods Pro will continue to be made in China, but the rest of the AirPods range, about 3 to 4 million units, 30% of the total Air Classic AirPods will be made in Vietnam, according to sources of the Nikkei Asian Review. The majority of AirPods,
Nikkei always makes me laugh.
I know. Still produced in China, despite some wearable electronics devices being hit with additional tariffs. So tariffs began this. And we are starting to hear of chip companies and others looking to figure out how they can move production back to the U.S.
There's been a lot of supply chain issues. Yeah, there have been a lot of supply chain. If we look at the fact that we can't get webcams, everybody wants webcams right now. You can't get them. That's because they're all made in China and the supply chains are arrested, you know. And so, a lot of people are thinking that having all their eggs in one basket is probably wasn't the best idea.
Yeah. Apple's going to spend about $334 million to open a new factory in Taiwan, according to the Economic Daily News in China. Apple will use the factory to produce mini LED and micro LED displays for future devices. They're not using micro or mini LED yet.
No, there was a rumor they were going to for the XDR display, but it turned out to just be regular LEDs with a lot of mini LED-esque technologies like reduced brightness zones incorporated, but nothing properly mini LED yet. And that's the latest rumor, I think, from Guo Mingqi and John Prosser both, is that stuff is now... instead of late this year, that's been pushed back to early next year because of all the problems with logistics.
Yeah. Actually, Guo Mingqi is saying at least six mini LED products released by the end of 2021, including 14 and 16-inch MacBook Pro models, an iMac Pro, a 12.9-inch iPad Pro, a 10.2-inch iPad, and a 7.9-inch iPad mini.
What, that iMac is going to look so good.
Yeah. What, so tell me, what is a mini LED and what does it mean?
So, yeah, so they're confusing because there's both mini LED and
I've seen the
micro
LED TVs. These are the, you can assemble them and make them an arbitrary size.
But they're so
size.
Big. Like those micro LEDs are so big.
And they're
right
very
now.
Expensive. I saw them at CES the last time I will ever be at a trade show. And they looked so fantastic. But that's not what a mini LED is.
No, so the problem is that LCD is still a good technology for some reasons. OLED is better in that it has deeper, darker, inkier blacks and also higher sustained and peak brightness levels. So it can do things like HDR that LEDs really can't get to because they have a backlight, usually an LED backlight. That means the blacks can never get truly black and they just can't put out enough light to make them truly, truly bright. But OLED, because it has so many compromises like off angle, the color shift, the blue subpixels wear out before the other ones. So they have to make pentile displays. They have burn-in issues. When you start to dim them, they do that pulse width modulation, which gives some people head. And the list literally goes on and on. So as good as OLED is, you have to do so much work And Apple Display does their own version of that. Samsung Display does their version. Everyone has their own mitigations. That everyone's been looking for technology that is as easy to use as LCD, but has like the HDR potential and the XDR potential of OLED. And that's what mini LED starts to get us towards, because they have much smaller local dimming and brightening zones. So, for example, you don't have to light up the whole panel. You can light up very specific areas of the panel, which gives you those darkness levels that OLED usually enjoys. And because it's localized light, you can often go brighter without the same heat issues that you get with traditional LED backlights. So you can have higher brightnesses. I don't think it goes quite as high as OLED. That's sort of a running battle. But theoretically, we should be able to get screens that are almost as good as OLED without any of the issues that we all see in OLED every day.
So I've seen TVs with what they call full array local dimming, or FALD. The idea is you have many, many LEDs. See, all LCDs have the same basic technology, and LED TVs are LCDs, or screens are LCDs.
Yes.
They have shutters, liquid crystal shutters that open and close electronically, and light is passed through them. You need a backlight, preferably as pure a white backlight as you can get. Yeah. In the early days, they were fluorescents, and in the old days, you'd see screens that would have bright spots at the corners.
Or it's getting fancier now. Like, the new ones use blue, and then they pull the blue out afterwards because the blue can be brighter without distortions. Like,
those are the filters that are in the LCD part. So,
and OLEDs are all different too. Like, the TV sets use filters, where the smaller OLEDs don't use filters. They use whole different technologies. It's all really different, wacky stuff.
So LCDs are brighter. They can go up to 1,000 nits, and because these backlights can be brighter. The issue is how well the – and if costs were no object, you'd have as many LEDs as you needed across the whole backlight with local dimming, so that you could say, well, that's going to be the black sky, the dark sky, or that's going to be we're in dark mode, so turn everything down except for these. So that gives you – it's not as – dark as OLED will give you, which, because OLED's
direct, OLED has its own light.
You're looking at directly at the lit pixels, but it can make it much darker, and that gives you a much broader range of brightness and darkness than other technologies. Alex, have we got this right?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't need to add anything to it.
I just asked Alex. Sorry. Yeah.
No, but I'm excited about micro LED. I just didn't know what mini LED was, so I wanted to understand the distinction there. It's not the same technology at all.
And Apple's working on the mini. They're working on the mini LEDs for the large. So the problem also is that OLED has never done well on medium-sized displays. They've got the technology nailed. Samsung nailed it a while ago.
Phone screens, BOE, they look great.
BOE kind of borrowed Samsung's process, so they've got pretty good OLEDs now too. LG has been working for a while. They have a different kind of OLED process. It's gotten better.
But I love my OLED TVs. I have to say that if you can afford it and you can darken the room, those are the best TV screens.
They're fantastic.
But you say that for like a 27-inch iMac, not ideal.
For anything from like the reason Apple's never done a tablet, like Samsung will do them in small batches, but one of the problems with OLED is keeping the brightness consistent across the panel, and TVs are completely different. They use a whole filtration system to do that. Phones don't do that, but the panels are small enough, you can't really notice. But on a tablet, you'll see areas that are slightly brighter and slightly darker because the brightness isn't consistent. And those panels are super expensive because they use more phone than TV technology, and their yields aren't that, like, there's just not that much OLED. Apple takes so much, Samsung takes so much, and the fabs just aren't that
so
many.
This is
still
the important irony, and I'm often at pains to explain to people who say, why can't I use my TV as a giant monitor? The computer monitors are higher standards.
Yes.
You need a better screen than you do for your TV. You don't need such a good screen for your TV, even though you might think.
Yeah, you're 10 feet away.
And I
do think we're going to continue to see the scaling up of the nits. You know, so we're going to see that nit number is going to keep on, you know, increasing from hundreds to, you know, low thousands. I mean, that's one of the competitive areas that we're going to see in these monitors. So especially as people try to highlight HDR over other things, they're finding a lot more people are responding to the brighter colors than they are to more resolution. So we're going to see
historically
monitors continually go brighter.
Historically in stores, they've always cranked up the brightness on TVs because they sell better that way. People like bright. And a lot of people, a lot of experts say you're turning your computer screen up way too bright, right?
It can be. But I think that as we get more HDR content, and as that content really starts to take full advantage of that gamut, the dynamic display you'll get used to it. We're not there yet right now. I mean, I think HDR is a lot more impressive than SDR, but when you start seeing screens that are at, 3,000, 4,000 nits, and then you go back to SDR, it's really hard.
It never hits. So, it rarely hits those 4,000 nits, or you would be blinded.
Well, we don't.
I've never seen those screens.
They're not. Yeah, but those screens are. Those aren't really publicly available. I mean, they're in commercial areas. There are some that are getting up to like 4,000 nits.
Well, how bright is the HDR?
I think it's 1,000. Is it 1,600 or 1,000, 1,600, somewhere in that range?
1,600 peak, 1,000 sustained.
It doesn't sit at that. You wouldn't want it to sit at that. That's specular highlights or, that's for...
Yeah. Right. So we're still talking about it. Imagine it being four times brighter, is what some of these, some monitors are capable of, three, four times brighter.
But again, wouldn't want it sitting in front of you four times brighter.
Oh, it just depends. It just depends on what the content is. You get used to it. The thing is
that's
is that
the problem. It, you do so get can, used to Leo. It. You get spoiled, and then
that's
you expect
so
everything to be so.
I mean, remember, we think of it as a bright monitor, but we go outside, it's still a lot brighter than that. Not like our eyes aren't used to seeing brighter colors. It's just they just respond to what that is. But I think that when we start getting into that 2,000 nit and above range, we will not. When monitors start becoming commercially available at that level, we're not going to be able to go back to SDR.
Alec, yeah. The ones that they use as the backdrops. What are the screens they use in The Mandalorian as the backdrops? Those must be pretty bright.
They're bright. I don't know. I actually don't know what the brightness is. I'll have to. I know who to ask.
They don't use real sets. They use virtual sets. They're not green screens. They're actual screens displaying the virtual.
And they light the whole scene.
Yeah, it's really
Well, and even then, the horsepower required to run those screens, you'll see stuff in the behind the scenes where it's still just green behind them. It's not, and you wonder why didn't they use the photo picture? Because the lens is too wide and it's showing too much of the screen, and they don't have the computer horsepower to draw that much of the screen at one time because these are massive backgrounds. Wow. And so it still kind of pushes the Unreal Engine, even with a super powerful computer, to a point where we're still on the outer limits of what computationally can be done. But it's such an exciting, I don't know if you've seen much of the behind the scenes that they're showing now on Disney Plus. I actually resubscribed. As soon as Mandalorian was over, I looked at everything at Disney Plus and I was like, nope. And I just turned it off. And, I was like, I don't need anything else. I was here for Mandalorian. And then they brought more Mandalorian back. So now there's these behind the scenes. And the first one with the directors are a little fluffy. But what's really cool is seeing the LED technology that they're using for that show is going to change everything. I mean, the ability to, see the, for the actors to feel like they're part of it. It really makes it easier to act.
Easier on a green screen, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And also it's faster in post, obviously. It looks more natural, I think, because you're getting every little hair and, all the little bits and pieces, and there's things that can happen in the foreground that would be very hard to key. And so those are all things that make it, just infinitely better. Yeah. And so it's,
so that blue I'm seeing in this is that's not a screen. Obviously that's going to be keyed in.
Yeah.
These are real. These are practicals, right?
Yeah. So, but you can see, let's see if they show. Yeah. Some of these, like that's in these cases there. Those are,
At CES, we saw it. It was amazing. They were demonstrating. And of course, it's can't just be a static screen. It has to be slave to the camera. If the camera's on a dolly shot, the screen has to change perspective.
Oh,
otherwise,
Tyler Stallman, on his podcast, he was interviewing some DPs who were home because all the directors of photography are stuck at home trying to film anything they can, like using their families as the actors and their neighborhoods as the set just to get commercials going. And they were putting Vive controllers on their camera so they could do some of the motion tracking they were used to doing at the studio. It was just amazing.
There's a guy on LinkedIn, and I think you can find him on Twitter, named Matt Workman. And he is Matt Workman is basically cutting the new ground there. I mean, if you're follow him on Twitter and follow him on LinkedIn, but he is doing amazing things with Unreal Engine and Vive controllers for the cameras and being able to do handheld shots. And you know, he's getting closer than anyone I've seen as far as just like being able to really put together, you know, movies completely inside of that that model. So it's pretty amazing stuff.
So yeah, they're shooting these in just in big sound stages, but it looks like they're outdoors because they could put a screen behind them that makes it look like it's outdoors.
And while that screen, while that screen is just insanely expensive to build out and to run, it's a lot less expensive than having to go to all these locations.
Yeah. Also, or locations, or even CGI, and it's a lot faster than CGI, right? I mean, you don't have to.
Well, there's CGI in there. I mean, you know, that's what's back there. You know,
it's CGI. Oh yeah, it's CGI, but it doesn't have to be the same demand. I would imagine
in 10 years it'll be on our phones.
I know.
That's what I keep telling myself. I know.
In ten years, it'll be made by there'll be a Lego version, and it'll just get it for Christmas.
Andrew Mazzappa in our chat room says, per American Cinematographer, the Mandalorian screens are 1,800 nits.
1,800. Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah. So that's bright, but it's not as bright as someday they'll be.
And we'll get micro LED on our watch first, Leo. So but from that scale down to our watch scale.
And the other thing is when you're shooting it, you have to remember that you have to also match that with all the lighting in the foreground. So you probably don't need to get past 1,800 because if you ever shot in front of a monitor, you know, well, even the monitors that you have on set there, you're probably not set at their full brightness because you're competing with all the light that is, you know, if the monitors get too bright, then you can't light the person in a way that they can be properly exposed.
This is so freaking cool what they're doing. It's amazing.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And so I remember Babylon 5 was famous because they were using Amigas for doing their CGI effects. It seems to me that these TV productions, these movie productions, this is where the cutting edge it lives, doesn't it?
And remember that this is all this is not going out.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It wasn't even an Amiga. It was a toaster. That's right.
Well, a video toaster was a card you put. I had an Amiga 2000, then an Amiga 4000 just for a video toaster when I was younger.
And, of course, the TriCaster that we use today is the descendant of the video toaster. Yeah. Oh, that's really neat. By the way, another reason to get Disney Plus, I just saw that July 3rd.
Oh, yeah.
Hamilton.
I know.
I'm finally going to get to see Hamilton for the first time.
July 3rd.
The original cast, right?
Yeah, so apparently they shot a movie of it back in the early days when the original cast was still there, and they've just been holding it this whole time. It was going to be released. Lin-Manuel Miranda had tweeted that it will be released end of 2021. Disney just announced yesterday it's going to be released early July 3rd on Disney Plus.
It's a COVID miracle.
I hope I can get a UHD copy of it.
It'll be like Dolby Vision, Dolby Atmos. It'll be like sitting in the middle of it. That's what I'm hoping for.
They shot the two final shows. I saw Lisa, Michael, and I saw the shows about a month before the ones they shot. And that was never to be forgotten. Easily my best Broadway experience of all. I mean, just really incredible. Wow. So if you get a chance to see it, it will be really worth it. And I tell you what, I'm keeping my Disney Plus subscription just for that.
Well, I know. It's not that we're going to see it once. My kids know all the words by heart to every song. And so I am already
running
bracing
all
for
the
impact.
Time in the background for the next 6 months.
Well, especially in the land of COVID-19, there's a chance that they might watch it once a day. Like I'm going to have to figure out. We're going to have to set up screen time is not really screen time. It's Hamilton time. Like how much Hamilton can they watch? Time.
But isn't it amazing that we can go from like delighting in The Mandalorian, which is the latest technology, to delighting in Hamilton, which is a stage play? I just love that about humans. We don't. Yeah. It's not the technology; it's what the artists do with it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, Hamilton had physical, practical sets that were incredible, but they were very simple and they were very flexible. They would roll things around. They had a rotating stage, but it was very. No screens.
When do we get a Hamilton? What we need is a Hamilton with the big LED walls that Mandalorian has, and then we can, you know, take it all the way to the outer edge. Yeah.
Or a Mandalorian stage play.
We could all be in Hamilton.
Baby Yoda takes Broadway.
Let's see here. What else can I talk about? Oh, hey, big update. I'm glad you're here, Alex Lindsay. I don't know if you use Logic Pro, but Logic Pro 10. Apple revealed that they are going to do the biggest update to Logic since the original launch of Logic Pro 10. New creative tools, including a new version of Live Loops, a professional version, completely redesigned sampling workflow, and new beat-making tools. This is the single best deal in music production. If you have...
It's very... Unce, though, like this version is very geared towards electronic dance music and hip hop and rap and those sorts of workflows. I think it has something, a little something for everybody, but it's really heavy on the drums and the loops and the samples.
Will this change it, you think? Or are you saying it's about this one?
This update is about the Unce.
Yeah.
Yes. Unce.
It's all about the Unce. Yeah. Phineas O'Connell, who's Billie Eilish's brother and her producer and writes all her music, says he's only used Logic Pro X from day one. And he says, I'm getting back hours I used to spend in the studio building sounds and kits. So that's, I guess, the new engine.
It's really amazing. I don't know what it's like for a traditional music person, but like I was looking through it this morning and I have no musical talent, but the way they've put it together, I don't know how traditional music people will feel about it. It might be more Final Cut Pro 10 sort of moments, but like it's like you can just put these things on an iPad or on the Mac. You can tap on them, you can move them, you can sample them, you can turn the samples into a drum kit, the drum kit into a drum toy. You can move your stuff. It's almost like finger painting with music in a way that is completely separate yet empowering compared to like traditionally like a John Williams full-scale orchestra sort of thing.
And it looks like, and I haven't done this, but it looks like in the Apple press release they show this image of a Mac, an iPhone, an iPad all working together on the same Logic.
There's a Logic remote that you can get for the iPhone and the iPad, and it's pretty slick, you know. And so you know, you can do it. You can have a lot of different controls. And what's really interesting is how seamlessly they've connected GarageBand to Logic. You know, my daughter started in GarageBand taking classes at the Apple store, and she's now using Logic, you know, and she's 10 years old.
My son made the same transition. I got him started with GarageBand when he was maybe 14 or 15, and it didn't take very long before he said, I need more. And it's such a seamless transition. He already knew how to use it, in effect.
Yeah, and that's been the great seamless connection for both, you know, GarageBand to Logic as well as iMovie to Final Cut, is that you have all these folks that are using one, and it's not a big jump for them to just go to the next one.
This is the real reason you should open the Apple stores, to get these lectures going again. Oh, by the way, look
at
that.
They are amazing.
It looks good on the Mac Pro, doesn't it? Oh, and the XDR display. Yeah.
And that's their new tool on the top there. They combine three panels into one to make it much more streamlined.
This thing?
Yeah.
That's the new sequencer?
Yeah, I forget. It's got a very quick simple sampler. Name now.
Quick sampler.
Quick sampler. Sampler and quick. That one's a quick sampler. The bigger one is a sampler.
Okay. Sampler. So these are for you to design your own samples, basically.
Looks like a NASA companionship to me.
I wish I knew how to use this stuff. I just think it's so cool.
Me too.
I think you gave me an idea, Leo, that right now I think you can take the Apple classes online. Do the Apple Store class online. And I've never done it because like GarageBand, for example, it's kind of, you know, it's meant for the younger people.
Right.
And, you know, I'd feel kind of silly showing up in this old lady who doesn't know how to use GarageBand. But if I do it at home, nobody has to see me.
Yeah, and I mean, well, you're a musician. I deeply regret not learning keyboards, because at this point, if you could play a keyboard, even almost rudimentarily, you could. There's nothing you can't do. You could imagine Beethoven could have done the whole symphony on Logic, right?
But it's like math, Leo. I bet you could do it with these new tools, because they're not the same as traditional music, and your math coding brain would take over, and you would just know how to arrange things.
I want to play with it. Brian Eno once told me when he wrote his music, he didn't write it with notes. It was all done in samples. He says it's all mathematical. It's like a spreadsheet.
Yeah, so. and it's definitely different than you know, just writing a song. Like I can sit in front of my guitar and write a song, no problem. But I can't sit in front of a computer and turn anything into music. It's a little just outside of my
right.
My understanding, like, I can't make the connection with music that I do on a computer, or I mean on a guitar, and music that you type on keys to do it. It just doesn't make sense for
Alex,
me.
Alex, is this capable enough to be a full DAW, or is it really just a loop machine? I mean, is it?
Oh no, Logic. People, whole albums get built on Logic.
Yeah.
So they have for. Yeah. For a long time, a decade ago, I was in Zimbabwe. I was talking to Oliver Dukudzi, who's a very prominent prominent artist in Zimbabwe, and I asked him what he finished the albums on. He was like, Logic.
Wow.
so he builds the whole thing, and he was in his 50s, and he's building them all in his home studio. He's building all his albums on Logic, and so you absolutely can do. All of that, anything you want to do. I mean, it really has it. And remember that there is a 90-day free version. So you can download a 90-day trial of Logic and then try to learn it and see if it's the thing that you want to do. I do think that Apple should do more, in the area of training around these, and really intensely, because right now people can download it for 90 days and play with it. Don't think about how you're going to learn it before you just download it, because remember that 90 days starts when you download it.
Right.
So. And there's some great training out there, but look at how you might structure yourself to have an hour a day or something, or an hour a week, to really dig in. And there's some great Logic stuff on LinkedIn and a couple other places that you can kind of find stuff. I can't say that I'm an expert, but I do most of my stuff in Logic at this point. So if I'm doing music, I'll, throw a sample, build opens and closes and stuff like that, and little sweepers. And I don't do anything. I'm not a musician, but if I need a quick open for a live stream, or if I need some kind of bed for something that's simple, it's really easy once you get used to a couple of the bits and pieces to throw stuff together and throw it in there. And it's all royalty free. That's why I do it for live streaming, knowing how to make your own jingles for your opens and closes and under and beds and everything else is really important, because you don't want to cross the YouTube eye.
It's just amazing.
At one of the Apple events, they had Ash Felder, who does a lot of the production for really I'm going to blank on all their names, but anyone who's into music these days would know, and like Selena Gomez types. And they would like send him a voice recorder of what they wanted to do. And he was in the backseat of a car with his little laptop and he starts putting the whole thing together, and he does the singing, and his singing becomes a choir. He sings something else, and that becomes like a whole other kind of person. Then he gets to his mom's house, puts his MacBook Pro down, finishes a song, sends it back to her. She tweaks a few things, and they have a rough for the entire production in a few hours, which he said, like, his whole life he was waiting for the computers to get out of his way and just let him work. And they're getting really close to getting out of his way and just letting him take what's in his head and output it to the world.
The other thing that blows me away, I bought this for Henry, must have been almost 10 years ago, for $200. And that's it. I'm still getting updates forever.
And education is all of them. For $299, you get all of the pro apps.
Wow. So $199, and then you can buy loops and samples and other stuff, right? Is the remote included, or do you have to buy that as well?
I think you just download that on the iPad.
I think it's free.
It's like 70 gigs of stuff that I think is free. Like,
it's
if you want to download it all, it's around 70 gigs of music.
So
you got to brace for impact when you download it. If you hit download all, it takes a while to pull all those samples.
I did that for Henry. When I gave him my laptop, I put all the loops on there. And I was lucky I had a large hard drive. You can pretty much fill a hard drive with it.
Right.
All right, now you make me want to go out and play with it.
Me too.
It's really cool. I wish I... Well, we all have a little bit more time at home. I expect...
Yeah.
I mean, you could do punk on it, right? I mean, it's not just all EDM.
Yeah, actually, my next-door neighbor and my partner and I, we recorded an album last weekend on... Jeez. He knows Logic, so he did it. Like, we just did it.
Wow.
I don't know how to do it, though. I just plug in my guitar, play music. He did all of the mixing and stuff.
That's
on
awesome.
It. So, yeah, you can do that very easily.
Oh, amazing. So it is a full digital audio workbench.
Yeah, he uses
you could punch an
adapter
in and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Pro Tools and Ableton Live and all of those?
Pro Tools is still there.
But how do they even compete now? I mean, those are very, very
legacy.
Expensive, I guess.
They're still, they're well embedded.
Same reason Avid is still around, right? Because people are just used to it.
Well, there's a lot of really high-end folks, and I do think, I don't know. there's a lot of tools that are built into Ableton Live that are very driven towards live performance. There's also a lot of really heavy duty tools built into Pro Tools that are really designed for what people use them for. And so I think it would be hard for them, for a lot of folks who are making a lot of money at this, to change cycles and relearn, you know, something else. I'm not, I think that probably Logic can do it, but I think that there is a, you know, a lot of people are going to finish out their careers using what they're using. And Pro Tools and Ableton Live are incredibly powerful.
And so the thing is, when it's in your muscle memory and you just go, I punch, 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 but
why people still use again, Photoshop?
Yeah. And I think that there's also working both with Logic and Pro Tools in the little morning group that in the office hours that I do in the morning. We've got a couple folks that are doing collaborative where they're literally recording on each other, you know, with each other over the internet. You can't jam together, but you can lay one track down for the other person and then keep
on
laying
stuff.
Use a click
track or something to sync. Yeah.
Well, it's, you're able to, record the next, you record the next track and then hear it immediately back. I mean, it's literally recorded into the track as you're playing.
Yeah.
So it's where we're getting to is pretty amazing.
I guess who would really be mostly challenged by this is things like Fruity Loops, FL Studio, because that's a MIDI loop system, and you've got that kind of with GarageBand almost. And are the instruments pretty good quality on Logic?
Incredible. I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Incredible. Well, and there's also
are they some recognizable?
Of the stuff
like if you use them, and then people hear it, they'll go, "Oh yeah, he made that with Logic. I heard that sample."
Really, you'd have a hard time
because you're going to modify them. You're going to tweak some knobs.
Right. Yeah. And I believe that Logic has the impulse, they basically done impulse recordings for some of the locations.
Say, I'm playing right now at Wembley Stadium.
Yep. Which I guess I'm told is I don't know how it happens because I haven't seen it, but there was an NPR thing where they were talking about these and they pop a balloon, in the location and that.
They
listen to how it echoes.
Everything they need.
Right. Well, I don't know. I feel like they're holding out on us. I'm like,
come on. You know there's a mannequin head with some weird headphones, and there's got to be more than just a balloon.
There's got to be more than just popping a balloon in the cathedral. But they say that these are that's what it is. But it's an interesting thing. But you can definitely have things sound like a lot of locations, and there's a lot of different apps that are doing that. That's like one of the new things, is to make things feel like they're in a larger or smaller by using that data.
Other stories, there are many. We've got lots to talk about, but let's take a break, and then we will talk about those in just a second. Andy has the week off. Nothing was wrong with Andy. I saw people going, oh my God, is Andy okay? Yeah, he's fine. But we have so many people on this show that we're rotating hosts so that we don't ever have more than four on a panel, because otherwise nobody gets a word in edgewise. So Lori Gill, who's rotated out in the past, thank you for doing that. I appreciate that. Managing editor at iMore. Alex Lindsay, who rotates in and out just because that's life for Alex. He's very busy these days. 090.media. And don't forget his 6 a.m. master classes on Zoom. Those are
a lot of fun. 7 a.m. It really starts at 7. I mean, if you get here at 6, you can come in. You can come in at 6.
That's why I missed it. Because I look up and I go, oh, it's 8. I missed it.
But we go usually, most days we go until 9. So 9 a.m. Yeah. So we go from 7 to 9 most days.
It's like your morning show. And if you want a link, people are asking, well, how do I get the Zoom link? Go to youtube.com/AlexLindsay. You can see previously recorded episodes, and in the comments right underneath there's a link to the Zoom. It's the same Zoom every time. I gotta go to one. I really do.
See one. This week we're now in that 250 to 300 people per event range. Wow. And so every morning there's this, now they're not all quite concurrent. So it's about 200 people at any given time that are there, 200, 210. And it's just an incredible conversation and really smart folks that are in there. It's not just me lecturing. It is me having a conversation with a bunch of other folks that in many times know more than I do. I'm just stirring the pot. And so we've been able to somehow collect about 1,100 people. And again, of those 1,100, over 200 are coming every day, every morning to talk about media. And it's everything. It's It's a mixture of how to do virtual events, how to stream live. Today we're talking about backhauling, you know, video. Yesterday we were I don't even remember what we were talking about yesterday, but it was something really good. but tomorrow we're talking about how to set up remotes. And the next day we're talking about video scopes. And so we're talking about, we go through very technical things, very philosophical things. We're talking about just the process of making media. And it is the, I don't know what got into me to start it, but it sure is a lot of fun. So nice. Hopefully, we had a huge influx of folks, a couple hundred people that came in after last week's show. So we love having MacBreak listeners.
You can just sit in the background and not, you know, just be a fly on the wall.
You don't have to have video at all. You have to actually raise your Zoom hand if you want me to move you to video. You come in, you're in the background. You can still ask questions and you can have access to the chat, but you can't. We won't see you in video unless you ask to be seen in video. And so you can just sit and watch and enjoy it. And it's you don't have to do anything there. And you can see a bunch of examples on YouTube. So if you want to see what it looks like, you can go up to YouTube. It's about 1/10 of the experience to be on, to watch it on YouTube as it is to be in the what we call the pit. being in the pit is something else just because there's so much going on. And then but if you watch it on YouTube, you can get a sense of at least what the conversation looks like.
I feel like, Alex, this is what you were born to do.
Yes. It really,
I think you found, I enjoy your, it. I mean, I get, you found your métier.
I get up every morning looking forward to it. I mean, it's like my favorite thing to do in the morning. So I get up and I make my little rice and eggs breakfast, and I make my coffee, and it's like 5 a.m., you know, because I have to get up and have to get all settled in. And so I'm all ready to go right at 6. At 6, as I said, people just come in, we start chit-chatting. Nice. But we really start answering questions at 7 a.m. And we move pretty quickly.
Thank you for doing it.
Do your kids just eye roll at you and pull the blankets over their head as they see you walking towards the stream?
Oy.
my kids are pretty well trained. They've gotten really good at, they peek in to see if I'm talking. And there's, I think I said last week, you know, there's this, if I go like this, you know, that just means that I'm on air. And both my wife is running Zooms for Spirit Rock meditation.
So she's busy too. She's Zooming as well.
The kids run the house.
There is a lot of Zoom. And then the kids are either using Zoom or Hangouts or Meet for their classes. And so there's an enormous amount of I had to get a whole other internet line.
I was going to say, your ISP must hate you. But, you know, you're doing what everybody's doing. I mean, I think that this is kind of the way it is now. Everybody wakes up and there's Zoom suddenly all day long.
Everyone's doing Twitlio. You were doing this for a decade before anyone else got the idea.
Oh, man, I'm glad we have a 10 gigabit symmetric from Sonic. Thank you, Sonic. Yeah. And that, of course, is Renee Ritchie. His new YouTube channel is going great guns, youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. Subscribe, ring the bell, hit the chimes, be part
MacBook
of the
Pro phone. Review just went live.
Oh, good. How do you like it?
It's good. I spent a lot of time explaining all the different engineering and marketing stuff that went into the decisions to make the low-end version versus the high-end version and which one is better for who.
So now,
because there are some people I think it would be better off with the low-end version.
I have the MacBook Air, and it's perfectly fine for me, the 2020 MacBook Air. But now I'm glad I waited because I just saw the rumor there's going to be a 14-inch MacBook Pro next year. Is that, you think that's
there'll always be something next?
There's always
It'll absolutely. I think as soon as they get the mini LED pipeline going, we'll have the new 16-inch MacBook Pro and the new 14-inch MacBook Pro. We'll start the swan song of Intel, and we'll just have for some people, the last hurrah of Intel, and then we'll get those.
They'll do the same thing with the 13 they did with the 15, which is bezel-less almost.
Yeah, the war on bezels, Leo.
Yeah, the war on bezels must continue. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. The war on passwords must continue. Passwords. Yes. Whoever thought this was a good idea, but now we all have hundreds of them. We have to keep track of them. And the problem is, you know, people do things to make it easier, like come up with passwords that are easy to remember, you know, your dog's name and your birth date. And then that's bad enough because easy to remember means easy to brute force, easy to guess by the bad guys. And then they exacerbate the problem. They pile error upon error by using that same bad password on 100 different sites. But I don't blame you. Of course you do, because what else are you going to do? You're going to use LastPass. LastPass is a password manager, but so much more. And we've been using, I started using LastPass 10 years ago. It's the first thing I install on every new computer, every new phone, every new tablet. It's everywhere I go because it's not just my passwords. It's also I use their secure notes to keep track of important documents like my passports and my driver's license and my social security number. It's a secure enclave that is only decrypted on your device. Only you have the keys to. LastPass does not. Everybody needs a secure enclave, right? And if you're a business, as we are, you also need LastPass for work because, you know, your employees are doing all those bad things you did with the easy-to-guess passwords they use over and over again. And now that you've set your employees at home, that remote workforce, as important as it is to your business, can also be a security risk. LastPass easily makes that transition from in-office to in-home. Your IT team will remain in charge. They're still the gatekeepers. LastPass lets IT keep complete control over which employees are accessing which resources, no matter where they're working. You get unified visibility over access and authentication. So it's, you know, it's never a mystery who's using what when. LastPass ensures your employees have secure access to their work applications. And, you know, it's not just passwords. They do single sign-on, too, 1,200-plus single sign-on apps, which employees love because they're easier. There's no passwords at all. And you'll love because they're more secure. And, of course, there's LastPass's world-class password management when you can't use single sign-on. Here's another nice feature. As the employees fire up Zoom and their kids fire up Zoom, maybe the internet gets a little bit spotty. LastPass does have an offline mode for both password management and multi-factor authentication. So no matter how bad the internet is, LastPass continues to work. Your team will be more productive and more secure. They'll collaborate better. We love the shared folder feature on LastPass. Each department has its own folder, so it's very easy to onboard new employees. I can't tell you how important LastPass is to our overall business. And I can't tell you how often I'm asking John or Russell or somebody for access to one of our shared resources, and they'll say, it's in the LastPass. Of course, it's in the LastPass. By the way, Thursday, we're going to do a special event. I want you all to visit. In the past, these LastPass events, we did one in Boston, were, you know, very limited number of tickets because they were in person. But hey, now we're doing it online. Cybersecurity and Identity Trends Unlocked. I will be hosting a panel featuring Steve Gibson, Jerry Buchelt, who's the CISO at LogMeIn, and our good friend Andrew Keene, who's the digital refuser. He's going to bring a dose of reality to the conversation. This coming Thursday, 1 p.m. Pacific, that's May 14th, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. We'll be streaming it at twit.tv/live, and then you'll be able to download it if you can't be around at that time on our Twit events feed. LastPass has really been a great partner with us over the years. They, you know, they bought the studio naming rights, and we're going to continue to do these panels, which is great. And I love it that they're willing to do them streaming online so everybody can participate. We'll be talking about the, you know, the future of digital identity for businesses and individuals. It's going to be very interesting. I can't wait. That's twit.tv/live, Thursday, May 14th at 1 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, LastPass. And when it's time to go home, make sure you take LastPass along with you. Find out more at lastpass.com/twit. You'll get simple security access across every access point with LastPass. If you're not using it, quick, go to lastpass.com/twit and find out how LastPass can help your business employees stay productive and secure. lastpass.com/twit. Good friends of the network and of the show, and we're very grateful to LastPass for all the help they've given us. It's even more appreciated now in this difficult time. Let's see. Oh, did you see the X-ray of the iPad Magic keyboard? That's iFixit.
Especially the trackpad.
Yeah, really cool. Really cool the way this works. So what do you like about the trackpad?
So people were wondering, like at first people thought that it was a virtual keypad like the MacBook Pro.
I thought it was too.
It was uniform. Yeah, totally uniform. But it turns out they made a giant, I don't want to call it a butterfly switch, that has such negative connotations now. But they created a switch that's basically balanced no matter which part of it you push on, which is very different than the lever mechanisms from traditional trackpads.
It works so beautifully, and it's indistinguishable from the haptic engine. I mean, What, did they not use a haptic engine because that would have been too complex or too much weight or too... Why do you think they made a button?
Too battery draining, maybe?
Oh, maybe. That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. It's very cool to see the X-ray. I just love it and how it's all wired and all put together.
It's well engineered.
Well engineered.
Turns out some
not innovating anymore.
They thought about some things.
Yeah. Yeah. Are these the scissor switches? These lines here like that?
Those are the things that hold the keycap on, I believe.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The palm rest. Going for a little.
And these are metal plates for structural integrity. That's part of the reason it's heavy, but also I think really important. So you don't get a bendy.
I saw some people complaining about the taffeta that they use to cover it. And I know Microsoft before used Alcantara. And there's just... They're all obsessed with fabrics and like Cheetos get on them. Like they don't understand how messy normal humans are, but I feel like this is at least you can clean this.
I think it's gorgeous. I couldn't be happier. I think it has to be at that price because it's really expensive, but if you can afford it, that is nice. That is really nice.
It's a deluxe keyboard.
I don't want to skim over your MacBook Pro review. They actually...
me too. It's so long, Leo.
They put it on iMore. How long is it, Renee?
It's like 3,500 words and 20 minutes of video.
Yow. There's a lot to say about something that... is it really revolutionary? It looks like the old MacBook Pro.
The whole thing that kills me is that everyone right after the 6-inch came out goes, just give us that magic keyboard on the other. We don't care. Don't do any other updates. Just give us those magic keyboards on everything. And Apple's like, okay. And they're like, well, where are the rest of the updates?
We want more improvements.
But the thing, I think the thing that's mostly misunderstood is that Apple has they have price points that they want to hit and they build the device to fit that price point. And the lower end MacBook Pro, it has a job to do, and that is, you know, they want a MacBook that's at that price point, which is really hard to do with 10th gen chips because they're like double or triple the price of the 8th gen chips. But they also are U series chips, not the Y series chips that are inside the Air. And there are some people that just prefer the design, or aspirationally they just consider themselves pros and they want to buy something with the word pro on it, and it better be, you know, not a penny more than they want to pay for it. So you have sort of, and then other people are upset that the really high-end one is close to the price of the 16-inch, but you're paying for some of the portability, not just all of the power. Sure. There are trade-offs. So, I just explained as much as I could, Leo.
Well, one thing I'm going to give Apple a lot of credit for, as you probably know, Black Hat and DEF CON are going virtual. Yeah. They've been called off because of COVID for obvious reasons, but there are some already... some presentations by security researchers that they had planned to do at Black Hat, including Thunder Spy. And I'm sure Steve Gibson will give us more information. We've always known that one of the problems with Thunderbolt is, just like FireWire before it, it offers direct memory access. So theoretically, you could use a Thunderbolt port to read RAM. And by doing that... you could also read anything that's going on in memory. You could even perhaps, and this it turns out to be the case, modify firmware or hack a machine. Eindhoven and University of Technology researcher Bjorn Reutenberg revealed the details of a new attack he calls Thunder Spy. Now, here's the bottom line. I'll give you the bottom line first. It affects almost all Windows and Linux PCs, even if they have Intel's late security protections built in. It affects zero Macintosh computers.
It's like an evil maid, though, right? So, like, it is a physical.
They have to have physical access, so that should reassure you also, right?
And it does affect you if you're using Parallels. Like, so if you're running
OS, that's funny. Oh man.
Yeah. But it affects.
If you're running Windows on a Mac, it would affect you.
Yes.
So but it's don't. Not. So the point is that the hardware isn't immune to it. It's just the Mac OS itself is immune to it.
Yeah.
Or it's not immune. Like, they can get part of the way in, but Apple does. I forget the details of it because there was some argument about whether it was completely unaffected or because, like, they could get the first part going but were stopped by the second part of it. But you're much safer.
It also explains because Microsoft is getting some heat when they announced the new Surface devices last week that there's still no Thunderbolt on Microsoft. And their response was a little cagey, but I think now we understand why. It's a security issue on Windows machines. Intel created something called Kernel Direct Memory Access Protection, KDMA, which prevents the attack, but because it also makes it less compatible with existing Thunderbolt devices, it's not on a lot of machines, including Dell's latest laptops.
Yeah. Well, and it's also one of the, like, this, these kinds of concerns is also when I'm going out, a lot of times, if I make a decision, like, am I really going to do heavy lifting today, or am I going to just be writing and interacting and working on things and even keynotes or whatever I'm going to do? And if I don't think I'm going to do something with my laptop, I often won't take it. And it's and part of it is because it's got a bunch of data on it that I don't want to lose. I don't want to think about. I mean, I back up most of it at this point, but I don't want to try to rebuild it if I don't have to. And so, but from a security perspective, you know, you want to think about, especially when you're traveling, you know, and this is in general, is just no matter what you're attaching to and what you're looking at and everything else, your iOS device is going to be a lot more secure than any other piece of hardware.
We should also
We
should also point out that this is not a, a kind of a non-trivial attack, Reitenberg.
Yeah, this is someone is very, very committed to your data. Like this is like
Daniel Craig shows up in your apartment.
Yes, this is for the NSA to use against you, or the CIA or the FBI to use against you.
The only thing I was going to add is that Windows, like, I don't want to give Microsoft too much credit because they've been very slow to adopt USB-C, and like that doesn't explain why they didn't adopt Thunderbolt years ago. And why they're not adopting you. Like, it would have been nice if they said, yeah, we're, you know, Thunderbolt is an old technology. We're coming out with USB 4 before everybody else.
Right.
So, like, this played into their conservatism. I don't think it played into their foresight as much.
Maybe you're right. Yeah. It's just something that it's nice that Mac users don't have to worry about this. And I guess that's because Apple has included the, I don't know if it's the Intel kernel protection or what Apple's done to protect it. Do you know?
I believe it's a Mac technology that they're using.
Okay.
And I feel this because I was complaining so much about the security protections in the Mac all this week. They were so annoying to me. And it, like, even like my god kids, they were trying to do like level design games that they couldn't because they were 32-bit and they wouldn't work on Catalina. And I'm like, why? Why can't I just use it as a computer? And then ThunderSpy comes out and I'm like, that's a mixed blessing.
Mac OS uses its own security mechanisms, such as a device, a whitelist. Oh, that's clever. So you can't just randomly plug in devices into your device. There's other things Apple's doing. Now, this article in Apple Insider says the Thunderbolt flaw still leaves Mac OS devices vulnerable to some security workarounds, such as cloning the identity of a device on Apple's peripheral whitelist to an attacker device. So it's not perfect. And as you pointed out, Alex, if you're running Windows or Linux on boot camp, you're just as vulnerable. So it's a software protection built into Mac OS. Still, thank you, Apple, for doing it right. It makes you wonder why Microsoft didn't. We had Juice Jack.
Hardware's hard.
Yeah.
Well, there was Juice Jack was the USB-C attack. I mean, these things have ports. People are going to experiment and try to get in through those ports.
It's a bigger issue with direct DMA devices because they have really direct access to the memory.
Yeah.
Did you read Matthew Panzerino's interview with Craig Federighi or listen to the podcast that Vitici did with Federighi? Yes. Very interesting information about the thinking that Apple used, the deep thinking Apple used when designing the cursor and the pointer on the new Mac iOS 14.
And I saw the argument afterwards, which I thought was fascinating.
What was the argument? I didn't see that.
So there's two camps on this. There's one camp that believe that Apple really thought deeply about this and brought the cursor from the Mac to the iPad in a way that was distinctly iPad. And there's another group of people who believe that because of Apple's abject refusal to make any sort of button affordance like there used to be prior to iOS 7, that this was the only way they could bring it over because you can't tell what a button is any other way anymore on iOS.
Okay, you're right. They had to do it. That doesn't mean it still wasn't clever.
It's both. Yeah, there can be multiple truths. The internet's not good at that.
Yeah. It's only because he had to.
Yeah.
I love it that Apple spends time thinking about this stuff. And then I love it that they're willing to talk about the process involved. And then, by the way, they did a great job. It really is excellent, I think. Are you so using the bridge?
If you saw them, like,
Lori, are you using the bridge or are you using the Apple keyboard? What are you using?
I currently have the Apple Magic keyboard on my iPad Pro.
What do you think? How does it compare?
I think that they're very similar. I think that the keyboard on the Magic keyboard from Apple is just beyond better.
It's a real keyboard.
It's an amazing keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. But the Bridge keyboard is also a lot cheaper. So there's things that come in, and you know, there's advantages and disadvantages to either. I think the Bridge keyboard is a really great keyboard with a trackpad. And I think if people can't afford or just don't want to spend that kind of money on a trackpad keyboard, the Bridge is definitely a great alternative. But what you get with the magic keyboard for the iPad Pro are the little things like that amazing cursor pointer design. And the trackpad itself feels better and works smoother in scrolling. That's something I noticed, that the Magic Trackpad just works better in the scrolling scheme of things. So, you know, you've got your options out there in the world.
Are you ready for some rumors? Prosser is at it again. He says your Apple Watch will soon be able to detect panic attacks.
Yeah, this is actually something that I think has been on the rumor table for a while. This is a little more specific to what the idea is, which I think, Renee, you might have been the first person that I heard bring it up, that Apple is looking into research for mental health with Apple Watch, and, you know, panic attacks go along with that.
If you knew ahead of time that it was starting to come on, you could do things like deep breathing and other things.
You could pull your car over.
Exactly.
Or at least guided breathing.
Yeah.
A guided breathing session, which I think they'll be implementing.
Wow, I think that's really
right. So using technology that already exists on the Apple Watch, you don't necessarily even have to have a new model. You can just, you know, a program in the health app connected to the sensors that are already on your Apple Watch can help with that. You know, we've noticed that you seem to be breathing heavily, or that you're sweating profusely, or that your heart rate is up.
You're going to start getting ones where we notice that every time you go to the casino, we see that you're, it's Tuesday afternoon and you're on your way in that direction. We would recommend a smoothie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. Do you feel like it's intrusive that it's warning?
Not at all. I think it's absolutely beneficial to people who might be starting to feel panic attacks, that this could be a way to help distract you from that thing that's starting to grow, whether it's using the Breathe app or even if it's something like just, you know, reevaluating your thoughts at that moment and helping distract you and say, okay, I already know I'm starting to have a panic attack, so I need to get off track. I need to start doing something else, not necessarily pull over and use the Breathe app, but maybe just start thinking about other things to calm yourself down. And I don't think it's intrusive at all. I think it's wonderful and beneficial to anybody who has ever suffered from a panic attack. You know, anything that you can do to help calm that and make it go away would be a benefit.
Right. It will be even better. It does not require this rumored blood oxygen monitoring, but it will be even better if it can monitor your blood oxygen as well. And that's very useful in COVID detection. I bought an oximeter for my finger, or actually it goes on my thumb. Because if, you know, that's an early warning sign of oncoming pneumonia, if you see your blood oxygen level going below 80 or 90, 88 or 90%.
And even
these diseases were supposed
to... Go ahead, Renee.
No, I was just going to say these diseases were supposed to stop the invading aliens in World of Worlds, not us. It's all backwards.
You know, it may have, as in The Watchmen, brought us world peace. We will all now realize we're on the same planet together. There's no point in fighting. We've got a bigger enemy that we can all join together and defeat. Or not.
If only that were how it was happening.
I would that our leaders had
announced your utopia. I
think this is a huge aspect for like the Apple Watch going forward, because they've done a lot. Like step by step, they added like the physical coaching, the activities, then they added the the heart rate monitors and the ECG app and the fall detection. And they can start doing for mental health what they've done for physical health. through everything, through like panic attack detection, but also through coaching, or even just the ability to record your state. If you want to share that with your therapist later, the way you can record things for doctors later, it just seems like a vast territory that they can really add value
if they nail the experience.
Yeah.
And I think that what's worked is the fact that they're not an advertising platform. that is what lets Apple do this is the people are like, yeah, I think that, you know, they know that Apple's doing everything it can. There's no, it doesn't, its vested interest is to keep your data, you know, as secret as it can to the point where
Google now owns Fitbit means they can't even compete at this.
I think it'd be hard. You know, if you're sharing the data with anybody or using the data to advertise to someone in any way, shape or form. And I think even if it's another division that's somewhere connected to your company, I think it gets pretty difficult.
Yeah. I was a long time skeptic of the Apple Watch platform, and I jumped on that bandwagon for the last couple of years, wear it all the time.
Yeah.
And it just continues to become more and more important.
Well, and it's like, I think that if Apple released a camera, for instance, you know, the problem is that I have no interest in the cameras when I find out that they're going to be used by the police or they're going to be used by something else. You know, I'm just kind of like, I don't know, you know, like I understand the value of it, of having, you know, a neighborhood watch, so to speak, with the cameras and everything else. But, you know, I'm pretty intense on about the privacy first, you know, in a lot of those things, especially not officially connecting it to outside entities. And so I think that, you know, Apple's kind of gone down that right direction that a lot of the other companies have had a little more trouble with.
Some credit to a company that I guess, as a disclaimer, should mention, I work for on the radio, iHeartMedia. They have a very active podcast division. And Connell Byrne, who's a former head of Stuff You Should Know Network and now runs their podcast division, has announced that they are going to do, I think this is really cool, a series of podcasts for graduates. May 17th will be National Graduation Day. And these podcasts will include a lot of very famous people, including Tim Cook. So you can have, I guess, sort of Tim Cook speak at your graduation, along with Bill and Melinda Gates, Becky G, Frida Pinto, George Lopez, Henry Winkler, John Green, Mary J. Blige, Mike Sievert, Smokey Robinson. That's pretty cool. And Tom Brokaw. Commencement speeches for the class of 2020.
Very different. This is very different than that service you can go online and get snap, like get
Shaggy
Tito, for instance. It's
not Cameo.
Yes. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. No.
First of all, it's free. Yeah.
But it's also not personalized.
No, it doesn't mention your name. So thank you, iHeart, for doing this.
I'd pay $500 to have Tim Cook just mention my name in a commencement speech.
And we currently congratulate our newest graduate,
Lori Goo,
for the job well done.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Lori Gill. Good morning.
Good morning.
He's got to do that for virtual dub, right? Like, they've got to have a Memoji Tim Cook come out and say, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
And I should point out that while this podcast is free, it is sponsored by Doritos, State Farm, T-Mobile, and the 2020 census. Because if one thing I know about iHeartMedia, they know how to make money.
Doritos and the census, those go together.
Those go together. Hand in hand. No, I think that's really great. I feel so bad for people, kids graduating from high school and college now, because not only do they not get to walk, do they not get to have a ceremony, but they're entering a world that is in complete collapse all around their heads.
But they're graduating. They're not making them redo the year. That's a positive.
That's true. Because when you come back this fall, all the juniors,
yeah, we don't know yet.
We don't know what you're going to see.
It'll be like the Spider-Man movie when they come back from the snap and, like, suddenly the kids are all different ages.
Oh, man. Let's see. What else? Disneyland in China reopened yesterday. Woohoo.
Lori's going. Lori's on her way.
I know. I'm heading out there right after this.
Honestly, I don't feel like I'm going to be getting on a plane or going to an amusement park or a concert
Disney
or even
Florida
a
was
restaurant.
Opening their resort, right? Not their park, but they were opening one of the resorts in Florida, and people were like just tisking them.
Seems like I don't know. No, I'm not going to tisk. Open up if you want to, But as one of the old people, I'm just staying home because I don't want to take the chance. I understand. I mean, people need jobs. They need to work. People need a haircut. that's fine. But I just don't want to take the chance. It seems like not fun.
I know. Not you don't fun. Have to.
I don't have to, thank God, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the boss. Let's wrap this up with your picks of the weeks. Ladies and gentlemen, start with the lady, Ms. Lori Gill.
I have two picks of the weeks this week. One reason is that one of them is shameless self-promotion.
Right on.
It's for a good cause. So Sickburn, my band, we finally made some t-shirts that we were just starting to sell right before the quarantine.
Of course.
So we have a huge stockpile of shirts for sale. And all of the money that is made off of this is going to be donated to the local punk club that we always get to play shows at. So
yeah, and they're closed, of course. $16, right?
Yeah, they haven't made any money in a long time. So you buy the shirt for $16. We send it to you, and all of that money goes directly to the Colony / Colonial Cafe. They have two different venues in the same one thing. So if you feel like buying a Sickburn t-shirt, it's a pretty fun logo. I really
love
it.
Who did that logo?
A local artist. His name is Matt K. Shrug. Goes by a couple different names, but Matt K is usually.
It's like a duck with a head sweatband and a punk outfit, flannel shirt running. It's cool. I like it. Very nice. That's Quacks Miss McThrashalot, the Sickburn mascot.
I love that.
Quacks McThrashalot.
There you go. So that's at sickburn.bandcamp.com, nice. And that's just the merch section of of our Bandcamp.
That's awesome.
But the other thing that I wanted to bring up, because I think this is just an absolute joy, and I've been watching it or reading it every day, it's called The Office Slack. And I'm not sure who has done this, but there is one person or one group of people or something who have literally started a Slack channel as the employees of Dunder Mifflin from the U.S. Office television show.
Oh, no. I've always wanted to have Michael, Dwight, Jim, Angela, Ryan, and Kelly in my Slack.
It's so funny. You go there every day, and it's a different episode of The Office. And it's literally just like transposing of the TV shows, but they're separated out by the different chat channels. So one of them is like the party planning committee. One of them is like the conference room, accounting, the warehouse. And you can go into each one of those channels, one of those chat rooms in that The Office Slack, and just read what's happening. And it'll be just, you know, every hour or so, someone will say something. You can just keep it open with like you normally would with your normal Slack channel, and just like pop over, like, oh, somebody said something. What's going on right now? Like in the general chat channel right now, about 15 minutes ago, Pam Beasley and Angela have just started talking about sending photos or something like that. Oh, it's the save the date. So
they're always from an actual Office episode.
Yeah, it's just the transcripts of the actual episodes. That's all it is. But they make it seem like they're actually communicating with each other in Slack. It's amazing.
It's freaking brilliant. I'm trying to join.
Is that Micah Sargent?
Right now.
Is that Micah Sargent's work?
No, it's mischief.xyz. mschf.xyz. Which sounds like a punk art collective or something like that. And so you can add, if you're already a Slack user, you can add this. If not, you can download. It's free, right? You just download and.
Yeah, you're just joining Slack. There's no payment. If you don't already have a Slack account, you just join Slack. And then, you know, they send you the little invitation. And it goes from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern time every day. So if you try to join after hours, it'll tell you it's after hours, the office is closed.
And like then any Slack account, they can turn off notifications at night, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what you'd want. I've got to quickly sign in and see if I can get it. Because we of course use Slack here, and often felt like that it's really straight out of The Office. So this will feel right at home.
It's kind of like what The Office would be like if there was a such thing as Slack back then when the show was on the air.
Yeah. Yeah. Which there wasn't, thank God.
No, no.
Very nice. So easy to get to. What is the address again? Because I've left it.
The address is theofficeslack.com. All one word, theofficeslack.com. Yes,
the office Slack. Very nice. Good pick.
Very clever. And somebody put a lot of work into that.
Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week. Your Slack of the week.
So I think I might have mentioned this in a show earlier, but I didn't make it a pick, and I think it's worthy of a pick watching the development of it. And my daughter, she's learning the piano, and which fits in with her doing logic. And I wanted to make sure that she can't go to see her piano teacher. So I wanted to make sure that we figured out some way that she could keep moving forward. She's got time. She just doesn't have a piano teacher. So I went ahead and subscribed to Musician for the piano. And I'm just amazed. I don't even understand how that works. I mean, she is learning so fast, on this app, and it's $30 a month. So it's not like it's not something you just lightly jump into. I told her, like, if you don't use it, I'm going to turn it off, because I'm not going to keep paying that. But I was paying
for
the
still a lot less than piano lessons.
Well, and so the whole idea is, and what I'm hoping to do at some point is kind of merge the two together where, her piano teacher, I haven't figured out whether she's technologically ready to do it over Zoom or not. But right now she's able, what Musician does is it has, really lets her learn how to use one hand, then the other. It's listening to the chords and actually telling her whether she's accurate or not. And she can look at it in a way that's easy to learn, but then she can also view it in ways that are, she's actually learning how to read music. And, she uses it all the time, and she's just learning one song after another. And she's 10 years old and doesn't have now I don't think this is a replacement before people get upset on, listening. I don't think this is a replacement for the teacher. She still needs to have someone expertly giving her feedback. But I do think that there is an incredible power in her being able. And I think that the thing that I'm most interested in is this interaction that can occur in education where we have games or other things that support kids between classes and then still give them the feedback that they need from human teachers. But support them in a way that, a lot of times what happens is they develop bad habits or they go down the wrong path for a week and then they come in and they have to be the teacher spends some of the time error correcting that. And so I think that there's a lot of opportunity there, and I'm just kind of, excited, that it's working so well. So anyway, and she seems to enjoy it. And
what's
so
the
it's,
name again?
And she's playing all the time. It's called Musician. So it's Musician.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's really slick. So, nice. So that's my pick for the week.
Very cool. Musician. YOUSICIAN.com.
Yep.
And Mr. Rene Ritchie, what about you? What do you got for us?
So I was told by Mr. Alex Lindsay to just suck it up and learn motion over my stay at home. And I really want to, I'm trying, but there's only so many hours in the day. So in the meantime, I've been using a lot of plugins, and I know I'm sure people have picked this in the past, but they keep putting out more and more stuff every day. I feel like it's Motion VFX, and it's a plugin company. They make stuff for Final Cut Pro. It's Motion templates. You can edit them in Motion if you want to. I've been using a lot of them just to do little things like titling and transitions. And there's just an incredible wealth of everything from like the latest sort of glitchy new age transitions to really corporate stuff, to wedding stuff, to party stuff, to sort of anything you want to make your Final Cut stuff look a certain way, to add a certain level of polish to it, but you're not good enough yet, like myself, to actually build it in Motion. They've built just so much of it for you, including trackers and masks.
I know how to use Motion, and I still use Motion VFX. I mean, I'm not going to do it all by myself. They put tons of work into it, and then I pay a fraction of the amount of money that it would take for my hourly for me to go work on it. I mean, they're spending days on something that's going to cost whatever it is. It's like $50 or less, or for any one of these, it's way cheaper if I see something that they built that is really cool and that I like, it's like stock photography or stock, but it's stock photography that is animated and that you can adjust and change and personalize to what you're doing. It's what they're doing is amazing.
Really cool. Really cool.
And there's a lot of sales, like especially over the last few months, they've had a ton of really good sales on it too.
So it's a motion, stock motion. What do you call them? Motion things.
Yeah. And but they're not just stock. Like you can, even if you don't know motion, don't own motion, don't want to go into motion. Like if you do, you can open them in motion and change things. I've done that. But like they also make it configurable enough that if you have no idea what motion is, you never want to open motion, you can tap on something, change the name of something, change the colors, turn effects on and off, turn parts of them, intro animations, outro animate, all those things, highly customizable, even just in Final Cut.
Nice. What's the URL?
MotionVFX.com.
I'm going to do the same thing as you, Laura. You gave me permission to do something a little self-serving. We've always had a Twit merch store, twit.tv/store, but we've added a new feature that I think everyone's going to like. We have now Twit face masks in a variety of colors, $10. You could show your loyalty proudly.
Did you make these?
No, these are not Leos. Those will cost a lot more than $10 once the Leos become available. No, I wish I could say I had. These are actually quite nicely made. The Twit face masks are available at twit.tv/store. I should ask Lisa. I don't think we're taking profit off the store anymore, but maybe we are. But if we are, it's not much profit. Are we? Do we make money off our face masks?
A little.
A buck or two. Yeah. Now you got to come here and see. This is the mask we wanted to make. Come on, Lisa. This is the mask we wanted to make, but unfortunately, rights prohibited us from making Tiger King masks available on the Twit store. I actually think she got that at Shinesty. She got me one too, but I'm not sure I'll be wearing the Tiger King mask.
Those are so funny.
No, isn't that funny? Thank you, Lisa. And then I will add a pic from Scooter X in our chat room. He mentions that this is something just added to Apple TV. They're going to do picks from the AFI, the American Film Institute's movie club, each day. Another pick of a classic movie that you might want to watch today. I think it's Spartacus. It's not free. You still have to rent it or buy it. But I think if you're looking for something to watch, these American Film Institute recommendations are always really great movies. I loved Roman Holiday, The Shawshank Redemption. And currently it's I Am Spartacus, Kirk Douglas, in his most famous movie. Everybody, I hope you're staying well and stay healthy. Thank you for being here for Mac Break Weekly. Thanks to Renee Ritchie. YouTube.com/RenéRitchie to start watching his great videos. iMore also has his review of the 2013 MacBook. I'm sorry, the 13-inch 2020 MacBook Pro.
I make that mistake all the time.
It'd be nice to review the 2013. I just wonder how good it is today.
How does it hold up?
Lori Gill, also from iMore. From iMore. I'm managing editor.
She is iMore now.
At Appaholic and Sick Burn soon. Coming back to, I think China Disneyland might be their first gig any day now.
If only.
And thank you, Mr. Alex Lindsay. It's so good to have you. Follow him on Twitter, AlexLindsay. He's at 090.media. And don't forget, 6 a.m., maybe 7 a.m. if you want to sleep in. You've got a Zoom date. Do you do it on the weekends too, Alex? Is it every day?
Yeah. Saturday we do it 8 hours straight. Oh, so we start at 6 a.m. and we go until 2, but we change every hour and you get a 10-minute break. So we have, at 9 o'clock, I usually talk about switchers. So I'm going to talk about graphics on switchers this Saturday. And then at 10 o'clock, Steve Bays, who was the product manager for Final Cut, talks about Final Cut. So it's a pretty pretty deep,
it's a good group
conversation. And then Mimo Live, remember Oliver is at 11. Nick Justichen, who's head of Immersive at Drexel, talks about Unreal at noon, and then at 1 o'clock it's usually something else. So it goes a long time on Saturdays, and then Sundays we just do a typical 2 or 3 hours of just sit around talking.
You know, let me know if you want to take over the studio, because The rent's cheap. It's in a nice location. You could just move the whole operation in here. I have a feeling that's where you're headed. Thank you, Alex.
Oh, we're just having some fun. Yeah, thanks.
We thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, every Tuesday. That would be 1700 UTC. You could tune in and watch at twit.tv/live. That's live audio or video, depending on what you need. In fact, if you keep that running in the background, we're here all day, all night. There's always something going on. And if you're doing that, make sure you visit the chat room because they're here 24/7 as well. irc.twit.tv. On-demand versions of this show and every show available at our website, twit.tv. In this case, it's twit.tv/mbw. And, of course, the best way to consume Mac Break Weekly is at your leisure by subscribing in your favorite podcast application. Just search for Twit or Mac Break Weekly and push the subscribe button a bunch of times all the way down that list. Get every one of the Mac Break Weekly and other Twit shows on your device so you can listen. You know, you always have friends in your phone ready to talk at you. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Alex. Thank you all for being here. Time to get back to work or get back to your grilled cheese sandwich because break time is over.
Hey, folks, I'm Micah Sargent, host of Hands on iOS right here on the Twit Network. If you've got iOS devices or watchOS devices or tvOS device, any kind of Apple mobile device, you are going to want to check out Hands on iOS. It is the best way to make the most of those devices. I walk through tips, tricks, and everything in between, plus answer your questions. So be sure to check it out. It's twit.tv/HOI.